I will announce again later when we get to it, but this meeting is being conducted in person at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the board using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or the internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. As a reminder to the staff and consultants who are presenting online, please mute all of your devices until you are ready to speak. Make sure you unmute when speaking and remute when you are done speaking. All staff and consultants presenting remotely, please turn on your cameras while presenting and turn them off when your item is complete. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda during item 3. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in this agenda may do so at the time each item is considered. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in closed session before they are considered by the board must request to make comment at the commencement of the meeting at 6 p.m. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the item that you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. We have any members of the, we do have members of the public present. I don't have any public comment cards, but we do have members of the public. I'd like to remind members of the public who are attending in person that there are public comment cards on the table outside. Please complete and return to the board secretary to help expedite public comments. The procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from board members. Please raise your hand. Once concluded, I will ask for a motion and a second. After any further discussion, the board secretary will call for roll call votes. In an effort to be more transparent and save time, we will be taking votes by roll call for all items. All directors are present for tonight's meeting except Vice President Gladbach. Director Kelly called and said he was caught in some heavy traffic due to a fire near the 14 freeway. He will be here a few minutes late, but he will be joining in progress. At this point, I'd like to continue the meeting. Move on to item 3, public comments. Do we have, Madam Secretary, do we have any public comments?
We do not.
Very good. Don't have any cards. We can move on to item 4, approval of the agenda. Because we are missing Vice President Gladbach tonight, and to allow full board participation, we will be pulling item 5.2, the election of the second vice president, from the agenda and adding it to the June 7th, 2022 board agenda. Are there any other changes, additions, or modifications to the agenda from the board? Seeing none, the agenda is hereby approved. We can move on to item 5.1, item 5, special procedures, and item 5.1. Madam Secretary, will you please administer the ceremonial oath of office to Director Gutzeit?
Director Gutzeit, please stand. Please raise your right hand. Would you please turn on your mic? Please raise your right hand. Repeat after me. I state your name.
I, Maria Gutzeit.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
To the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California.
To the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully.
That I will well and faithfully.
Discharge the duties upon which I'm about to enter.
Discharge the duties upon which I'm about to enter.
Thank you, Director Gugutsite. Congratulations again.
Thank you.
Welcome back, Director Gugutsite. All right, we can move on to item 6, approval of the consent calendar. You will see before you that we have three items on the consent calendar. I would entertain a motion for approval of the consent calendar.
I have some comments on the minutes.
Pardon me?
I have some comments on the minutes.
I still didn't hear you.
I said I'd like to make a comment on the minutes.
Oh, that's you down there. Okay, yes, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, I was wondering if Mr. Stone would accept a slight amendment to what he said. That is what he said, but then when I looked up the notification for the Wells, it was only P in the Newhall system that was offline because of PFAS, only the P well and pine tree. So I'm wondering if you could just say well, one well, and not all the wells. He's not here to. The minutes.
There's 6162.
Oh, it's minutes from April 26th, and it's the general manager's report.
6.3.
It's page 15. Sorry about that. And there was this discussion about how many wells in the Newhall area were down for PFAS. And after looking up the notification, it's just the P one. And so I was wondering if it would be all right with him if we just changed it to well instead of well.
I don't have the text quickly in front of me, but my recollection is my comment was in reference to a public comment that said none of the wells in the Newhall system had been contaminated, and I think I tried to correct that. So at that point, you added your comment, which I think is already on the record.
No, it's not on the record. That's why I was bringing this issue up, if it would be all right to just...
Do we not record the board meetings?
People look at the minutes. They don't...
I understand, but that's what I said. So I'd like the minutes to reflect what I said.
All right, then could we add something that after checking, it was only the one well?
I'm not sure what the point is. I was answering a question that was there were no wells affected.
Well, it indicates that there's multiple wells, and some people know where those wells are.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did it say multiple wells?
Yes, that's what I'm asking. If you can,
I see. Okay.
So it.
Yeah, I understand now. I misunderstood your point.
My point wasn't to complain about you saying that. It was just to get the number of the wells right so that people reading that wouldn't get upset.
Right. I think I'm fine with an amendment to indicate that at least one well.
Yeah, that's fine. That's all I'm
so far.
Yeah, we'll hope it stays that way.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
And then I would move the minutes. Or the whole consent calendar, if you mean.
So we have a motion incorporating the comment and agreement on the minutes on the 26th.
Yeah, I think so.
Lynn, can you move closer to the microphone?
Oh, or sure. Speak up better? Sorry, I can hear myself.
I'm sorry, Director Flanbeck. I'm sorry. I'll just back up. Do we then have a motion on the amended consent calendar?
I would make that motion.
We have a motion. We have a second.
I'll second it, Ed Colley.
Second by Director Colley. Do we have any public comment on the consent calendar, April?
We do not.
Very good. Unless there's further discussion, please call the roll for attendance, and please note that Director Kelly has arrived.
Thank you. As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Atkins.
Yes.
Director Planbeck.
Yes.
Director Ozahofsky.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
This is abstain.
Abstain. Director Cooper.
Yes.
Would you turn on your mic, Director Cooper, just so it goes for record?
Yes.
Thank you. Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Ford.
Abstain.
Director Gutzeit.
Abstain.
This item does pass. I'm sorry, President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass.
Thank you, Board. We move on to item seven, item action items for approval. Item 7.1 is to be presented by Sarah Fleury. So this is 7.2. It is to authorize General Manager to enter into a short-term water exchange agreement with Irvine Rands Water District. Sarah, are you ready to present?
I am. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for the...
Hey, Sarah, give me just 1 minute.
Okay. Well, I can probably start talking while April gets going because, you know, I like to talk. So good evening, everyone. I'm here to go through the short-term water exchange agreement with Irvine Ranch Water District. And we'll go to the second slide, please, April. So a little bit of background. In the beginning of this water year, which was October 2021, the Water Resources Committee asked staff to pursue some new water supply programs to help enhance our water supply reliability for 2022, because it was already looking like it might be a dry year. And so we did so. And in December, we came back and we presented the committee with some options that we coordinated with the Irvine Ranch Water District. We brought to them a short-term drought relief water exchange agreement, which is what I'm going to be presenting tonight. And the committee liked the exchange option and recommended that we bring it to the board. We also discussed a long-term program with them, but we're still working on negotiations for that. So I'll be back hopefully within the next month or two with more information on that. And that's not as important right now because it's a long-term agreement. And then there's a photo here for some of the new board members. This is a photo of the ribbon cutting ceremony for the drought relief project at the Rosedale Rio Bravo Water Storage District. And this project was a partnership between Irvine Ranch Water District, SCV Water, and Rosedale to help enhance our baking program recovery through the development of 6 wells and conveyance facilities. And this became operational in 2019. Right before PFAS started. And so this project is really a big reason why we were able to recover as much water as we have in the last few years. So we'll kind of dive into that a little more, but just take you down memory lane before we knew we had to wear masks all the time. Next slide, please. So this exchange option will occur through the programs that each agency participates in with the Rosedale Rio Bravo Water Storage District. SCV Water has a banking program with them. At the beginning of 2022, we had about 79,000 acre feet stored in our program. We have first priority to recover 10,000 acre feet a year. And then we have, we can get up to 20,000 acre feet a year, but that second 10,000 acre feet is at second priority recovery. So if other partners aren't using this capacity, then we're able to recover more water. And that's kind of what's been happening the last couple years. For 2022, we know that there's at least 5,000 acre feet of this second priority water available that we're confident in. And for 2023, we're just not sure yet. It's really dependent on what's happening with Rosedale operations and other partners. So that's to be determined. Irvine Ranch Water District Water Bank includes a water storage account in the with the Rosedale program as well. And then they have adjacent recovery and capacity and recharge facilities in their Strand and Stockdale integrated banking projects. And so that's what they use to help supply them water during droughts and shortage conditions. So they have more recovery capacity with that first priority and recharge facilities as well. Next slide, please. So the way that this exchange would work would be that Irvine would provide SCV Water with drought relief assistance by allowing us to utilize their first priority recovery capacity in their water bank to recover water from our storage in the Rosedale program. So basically, we're using their pumps to get our water out. And in exchange for this, providing this drought relief, we would then transfer an equal amount of water to them in the future of Table A to either Metropolitan on Irvine Ranch's behalf when an allocation is 45% or greater. So when we get an allocation of 45% or greater, that puts us in a position where we have a lot more water to work with, and that would it would be a comfortable at that point for us to return the water that they helped us out with in dry years. The terms for this program would be 2022 to 2027. We would have the option to utilize their recovery capacity for up to 5,000 acre feet each year. We would be recovering our banked water. There would be some losses. The key in this exchange is that the Irvine Ranch recovery capacity would be first priority also. So we'd go from having 10,000 acre feet of first priority recovery up to 15,000 acre feet if we use this program. And then we would be able to return Table A water by 2027. Again, as long as the allocation is over 45%. The cost for this to happen, basically we would pay to recover the water from their wells. So we would pay the operations costs and the electrical costs to pull the water out of the ground. Irvine Ranch would pay when we return the water to them. So they'd pay any costs to recharge the water or move the water if Metropolitan wanted to send it somewhere else. And then if there was any wheeling fees through Kern County, we would split those. We'll go to the next slide. So the main benefits of this program for us is that it really gives us the extra security to know that we can recover the water if we need to. So with multiple dry years in a row, we've been pulling a lot of water from our Rosedale program. The groundwater is going down and more people need water when it's dry. So that second priority capacity that we hope is available isn't guaranteed. And this allows us a little bit more guaranteed capacity. It would increase our capacity in 2022 and 2023 to at least 15,000 acre feet. Plus we would have any second priority recovery available as well. It's really cost effective in comparison to going out on the open market. When I was putting this presentation together for the committee, at the time we were seeing open market transfer options at $1,400 an acre foot. Since then, there's been one that actually went through $2,000 an acre foot. And so it's getting really expensive out there for this water, and this is much more cost effective. And then the other benefit is that it provides us that additional drought relief through 2023. And we just don't know what's going to happen next year. So it'd be good to have that little bit of extra security, not knowing. Next slide, please. So the Water Resources and Watershed Committee, I'm waiting for you to go to the next slide. Maybe my screen is my internet slow here. The Water Resources and Watershed Committee does recommend that the board authorize, pursuant to an exempt under CEQA guidelines, that the general manager enter into a short-term water exchange agreement with Irvine Ranch Water District as described in Exhibit A. And I'm happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you. Thank you, Sarah, for the presentation. Madam Secretary, do we have any public comment?
We do not.
We do not. All right. Any questions for Sarah or discussion amongst the board? Director Planberg.
Sarah, a short-term transfer, does that have to be reported to DWR? And is 5 years considered a short-term? I thought short-term was 3. And by the way, I think this is a wonderful solution. I was just curious about that.
I actually am not sure about the short-term transfer. I think that with the change of the rules and the contracts, it can go a little bit longer. But I will have to get back to you on that unless Dirk knows offhand, which I assume he does.
Are we waiting for Dirk?
So I think short-term exchanges. Well, I think DWR approves will approve exchanges that last up to a term of 10 years with potential extensions after that. But I think that's what the recently enacted contract amendment provides for.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Marks. Director Ozachowski.
Just want to make sure that so all transfer water that we use, I mean, transfer water that we have to provide back, they have to be delivered no later than December 31st, 2027. And we're comfortable that we will be able to do that.
We hope that we will be able to do that. I mean, the history of our hydrology suggests that it won't stay dry forever. And there's a good chance that we will get rain again. You know, we never know what will happen. And so if, in fact, we aren't able to return the water by 2027, then we would, talk with Irvine Ranch about this and work out a deal, whether we extend the option to give us a couple more years, or we could also take water out of our storage and transfer it over to them, kind of a paper transfer. We would also have opportunities to send them Buena Vista water if we needed to. So we have a bunch of options, but I think there's a good chance that we would be able to do so.
Understood. Thank you. Back to you, Chair.
Any other questions for Sarah or comments? Director Bronstein.
Thank you so much for the presentation. I loved it as usual. So Director Ozachowski already got my main question, which was what happens if we can't return the water? And was there a price on this that I missed somewhere on how much it was going to be per acre foot, or was that?
So our average price, I gave you the price of what it would cost if we were to go purchase water on the open market. So that's at $1,400 to $2,000 per acre foot. The cost for us to take water out of the Rosedale facilities ranges between like around $80 to $100 per acre foot. So it's
okay,
our most affordable.
Yeah, substantially. And then my last question was, was it the Buena Vista water that they're having currently issues with their water not being able to pump as much? Or was it?
Yeah.
Is that the one?
It is the Buena Vista water. So the Buena Vista water, we're working with Rosedale because the pumps that are used for that program on their facility, the water levels have gone down and they're just not able to produce enough, but they've been working with Kern County and they're getting surface water to exchange. And so they're working that out. We're going to get our 11,000 acre feet. We've just had to kind of coordinate with them as to when that water comes to us. And it's kind of moving all over the place, but we are going to get it.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to figure out in general the hydrology and what the chances are of us having enough water to pay back to get or whatnot. But this is a great plan. Thank you.
Any other Director Armitage?
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation and for the memo. So a couple of big picture questions. I'm supportive. I just want to make sure I fully understand everything. So big picture question, we're entering into this exchange instead of requesting to withdraw more through our second priority rights, because this kind of maximizes the amount of water we can get through this arrangement. Is that correct?
Yes, but it gives us the option. So one thing that's listed in this exchange agreement is that they would be obligated to deliver us the water in the summer when we aren't able to generally get it from our second priority capacity. So that's a benefit in itself as well. Right now for 2022, we're still evaluating whether or not we're going to need to use this program, because things are changing very quickly. So we're going to make sure that we coordinate really good with Irvine Ranch and we're good partners. And if we use their capacity, you know, we'll do the right thing. But there's an option that we won't have to either. So we're kind of working that out. This just gives us the option. We don't have to use it if we don't need it. Okay, but it's nice to have the option there and like all the documents and agreements signed so that if we need it, we can let them know at the beginning of the year and then we feel more comfortable with our situation that continues to be
defined. Thank you. Another big picture question is, it wasn't clear to me how Irvine Ranch Water District benefits from this exchange. Can you either re-explain that or explain that?
Yeah, so Irvine Ranch is a member agency of Metropolitan, and they have their own banking program, but they do a lot of wheeling of water, and they don't have a lot of Table A water in their banking facilities. So this is an advantage to them, because Table A water from us, they could deliver out of Kern County down to them or somewhere else that Metropolitan needs it. Their challenge is getting Table A water in the bank. They deal a lot with people in Kern County, but sometimes that Kern County water has to stay in Kern County, so they can't necessarily use it for their district. So it makes it more challenging. So the benefit to them is that they would have the option to have Table A water, which they could send anywhere.
Okay, thank you. And then a couple more focused or detailed questions. You'd mentioned that Irvine Ranch Water District also has the Strand and Stockdale integrated banking projects. Those aren't directly tied to this agreement with them, right? That's just kind of ancillary information. Is that correct?
They so their banking projects are adjacent with Rosedale, and Rosedale manages them for them. So it's a coordinated that we would either be able to utilize the DRP wells that we have with Irvine Ranch, if they're available to recover the water. If those aren't available, then we would be able to utilize recovery capacity from their other banking projects that they have first priority from. They're all kind of located in the same place. So it just really gives us more options. They have a lot more straws in the ground, let's say that they have first priority to use.
Okay, so then a follow-up question to that is, are there water quality issues with the Strand and Stockdale banking projects?
I don't believe so. I think all of the water that comes out of their banking facilities that goes into the aquifer, it has to meet water quality regulations before it goes down the aquifer. So it's pretty standard across the board.
Okay, thanks. And then last question. Why does the water go back to Metropolitan instead of directly back to Irvine Ranch Water District?
Because Metropolitan is the wholesale agency that manages their imported water supply, and this is an imported water supply. So they just have extra programs to store in imported water. I don't know if I explained that correctly, Dirk, but it's kind of like how CLWA was coordinating imported water supplies for Valencia. If Valencia made a side deal, then they'd have to come through us, because we're the state water contractor that has rights to utilize those facilities.
Yeah, DWR would not allow a direct deal between one state water contractor and another state water contractor's member agency. Historically, DWR has not facilitated those types of exchanges. Because historically there were some state water contractors that were trying to undercut Metropolitan's price or another contractor's price by exporting their state project water into another service area. So they developed a policy and a process that kind of requires that it be between two state water project contractors. So for this transaction, it's kind of three of us are involved. It's Santa Clarita Valley Kern County Water Agency, which Rosedale is a member agency of, and then Metropolitan and its sub-agency, Irvine Ranch.
Thank you very much for answering my questions. That helps me understand it all. Thanks.
Thank you, Sarah and Dirk, for your responses. Are there any other questions? Director Gusey.
Thank you. Quick question to follow up on Director Orzechowski's question. Is it returned by 2027 if our allocation is greater than 45%, or either or can you explain those two that are right next to each other in your presentation?
That is within the agreement. That's when we said that we would be most likely to be able to return it. So at that, that's kind of the tipping point for us when we feel like there's going to be surplus water that we would be able to do that. So anytime that there would be 45% allocation or higher, we would be obligated to send back some water.
Okay. But the deadline is 2027, even if we have 5% allocation until then. And I heard you say, you know, we would go back to the negotiating table, but the hard deadline is 2027,
yes,
regardless of our allocation. Okay. And then I do want to say again, and I was there when we did the ribbon cutting. This is just so exciting how innovative this agency is, and Irvine. When you drive up the freeway for 2 hours to, you know, Kern County, which I've been up there many times, it's nothing like Santa Clarita or Irvine, but that we think ahead and find ways to benefit our respective communities, I think is a really cool thing. And I support the recommended action. I would move that action.
Second, Atkins.
Director Ford.
I was with the Water Resources and Watershed Committee heard the item and was in supportive of staff's recommendation for this. I think staff's done a good job in laying out what the program would be. And I think it's very critical to have this flexibility in 2023 in the event we have back-to-back dry years as well too. So I was going to move the item, but we have a motion and a second. So with that, thank you.
All right, we do have a motion and a second, but before we call for a vote, I wanna give any other director who wished to make comment, Director Cooper.
You know, this is a really exciting program, partnering with Irvine Ranch Water Company, it's Water Company, has been just a great experience. The wells that we put in out in the Rosedale Rio Bravo have been in conjunction with Irvine Ranch, and being able to participate in their Strand Ranch and Stockdale programs is something that we've been looking at for a long time, and they've wanted to partner with us. You know, I look at Irvine as one of the premier water districts in Southern California. Irvine Ranch and Eastern Municipal, I think, are just the most progressive water districts in Southern California. So I really like to see this program where we're at. That's excellent. Thank you, staff.
Thank you, Director Cooper. And any other comments from our directors? Did you want to speak? I think we asked. Did we ask for public comment? Yeah, we did not.
I believe we did at some point, but we could do it again.
We don't have any cards on 7-1, but do we have a public comment on 7-1, April?
We do not.
Very good. Any other comments from directors before I add my 2 cents? Very good. The work that our Water Resource Department does doesn't necessarily get this publicized as much as it is now, unless we're in a dry year, several dry years. That's when these programs become vitally important. But it doesn't mean the Water Resource Department staff and the board support continues to look for opportunities like this 24/7 every year, and looking forward to the possibility of future dry years, we continue to do so. And as Director Cooper pointed out, Irvine Ranch Water District is a good partner. It kind of illustrates the reach that our agency now has. And I think we had that reach when we were CLWA and providing wholesale water to our local retailers. But I think now we have a One Valley Water Agency. Our reach and our influence across all the state water contractor groups is much more important, much more visible now. I would much prefer to have lots of water available from state water projects so the Water Resource Department doesn't have to work so hard to fill the gaps from dry year supply. But this illustrates how important that is for our project. And I appreciate all the comments from directors. And I, too, will support this measure. And we have a motion and a second. If there's no further comment, we can call for the vote. April.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Kelly.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Cawley.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Ozahofsky.
Yes.
Director Plambeck.
Yes.
Director Atkins.
Yes.
Director Ford.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Gutzeit.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass.
Thank you, board. Thank you, staff, for all your hard work in making this agreement possible. With that, we can move on to item 7.2. Presenter tonight is Rochelle Patterson. And the item, she will present on the overall budget, and she'll get presentation support from Courtney Mayle, Mike Alford on the CIP portion of the budget. The item is to approve a resolution revising the FY 22-23 budget. Courtney's going to take lead off. Go ahead, Courtney.
Thank you very much, Board of Directors. My name is Courtney Mayle, Chief Engineer for Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency. I'm co-presenting today, as you said, with Mike Alvord and Rochelle Patterson. This is a modification of our original presentation that we did for the E&O. So we did change some things in there. So for those of you who saw it before, let's see if you can spot the differences. Everybody else, hopefully we can get through this and show you the importance of our projects and the projects we are proposing to do upcoming. Next slide, please. This is the proposed PAYGO budget in total for this fiscal year, $75 million. The proposed funding is $21 million from revenues anticipated this year, $47 million from carryover of unspent funds from last year, $7 million from anticipated capacity fees. Rochelle's going to go over the funding of this in more detail in later slides, but I thought it's important to start off with the bottom line beginning slide. Next slide, please. So the engineering CIP overview, and you're going to see the term PAYGO a lot on these slides because we wanted to classify that these are all of our PAYGO budgets, which is really what we're looking at today. We have a total of 37 million proposed projects here. We are only highlighting the ones that are greater than $1 million to keep the presentation brevity. There are many other projects that are less than $1 million. Most of those are design or other considerations, studies. I know this is a large budget. It will be challenging for us to complete. Several of these projects, however, are already designed and are moving to construction, including the most expensive one on the list, Saugus 3 and 4. It's obvious now that material shortages and additional regulations can impact project schedules, and that will likely happen. So although we are ambitious in trying to achieve this, it's possible that some of these projects will slide into future years. We are going to do the best we can, and if we don't budget them now, we can't begin them. So knowing that you're going to have those slides, it's still important to keep the budget in place and to move those projects forward. Next slide, please. So the detail about the projects, this is an already approved project. It's beginning construction now. The contractor is starting this June. These are new wells that are designed to replace other wells that were impacted by PFAS. And a portion of this project will be reimbursed through the settlement agreement. We wanted to highlight the benefit and importance of these projects. And so with this project, we are trying to restore approximately 6,500 acre feet per year of water supply. Next slide, please. This is the multiple other groundwater treatment projects we have going on in the valley in this proposed budget, continuing our focus on regaining local groundwater supply. The TU and S wells are a combined project on a single site for treating PFAS and VOCs, and completion dates for these projects will likely go beyond 2023. Total production restored for the groundwater treatment projects you have listed here is approximately 17,000 acre feet per year.
Hey, Courtney?
Yes.
Almost would never interrupt, but I think it's just coming out of your mouth on autopilot because we're doing so much PFAS work. The S3 and 4 wells are replacements for perchlorate impacted wells. I knew that's what you meant. Yes, yeah, no sweat.
Thank you. Next slide, please. The Dean Zone improvements. These are a developer project that we are working with the developer on correcting deficiencies identified in the 2013 master planning study. The developer is required for their fair share of all of the proposed facilities. That means that all of the portions required for their development are required to be paid for by them. We are going to contribute to that tank and get it up to the size needed to serve this community. The benefits of participating with the developers, the developer contributed the land for the tanks, the developer conducted the environmental review, and there's an economy of scale for designing and constructing a tank of a larger size rather than trying to construct multiple smaller size tanks. So by doing this and working with these developers, we are the two different developers in this instance, we are able to address deficiencies in our system. Next slide, please. And from that, I'm going to pass it over to Mike Alvord for the operations side.
Thank you, Courtney. Good evening, everybody. Good evening, God, wherever you are out there. I heard that voice come in. It sounded like God was speaking to us. I hope everybody's doing well. So this is one of the slides that Courtney and I discussed about changing a little bit, because one of the things we've done is for pipeline projects, we're working more collaboratively between operations and engineering. When we first merged, operations pretty much took the lead on the pipeline projects, covering everything from planning, design, all the way through construction. We quickly realized we didn't have the resources or the staff to do all of it. And so we solicited the help of Courtney and his team. There's a lot of criteria that go into pipeline replacements. Age is one, material type, failure, a variety of things. These are just a list of a few of the large projects. The Valencia Marketplace was one that we did hand off to engineering. So engineering's taking the complete lead on this, doing all the design and then the bidding. And then we'll have a contractor come and do that work. The Dickinson one was unique in that both of us collaborated together. So our operations staff did the underground utility locating, helped with the topography planning, the alignment of it, and then also worked with Courtney's staff on getting some DDW waivers for offset pipeline alignment. So it's really a collaborative effort. But then Courtney's group's going to take this, bid it. Contractor is going to come in and install it. That middle line, the operations pipeline replacements, those are operations driven. So operations is going to handle those directly. We'll do the design with an engineer and we'll do the construction as well. The next one's a placeholder for unforeseen and unexpected. And on the next slide, I'll mention one of them. But what happens throughout the year is if you have a leak somewhere, you might identify an area that you can remove and maybe make a different connection. Or maybe there's something that we haven't seen, for example, the city with Henry Mayo Hospital, which I'll mention again on the next slide. And then the rest of it is just a bunch of pipelines that are down the pipe, pun intended. And as Courtney mentioned, we may not get to all of them, but we need to at least start them in terms of design, planning and design, and then preparing the RFP to go out to bid. Next slide, please. So here's just a few other ones that are listed that where and what phase they're in. So Vasquez Canyon is in planning and design. That's an operations engineering collaboration. Same with the Abdale Street, Maple Bay Court, and Beech Grove Court. Operations will be doing the underground utility locating for that. The RVTP, that's the Rio Vista Treatment Plant sewer pipeline. So that's the picture on the upper right where that red cloud is. So we have a sewer line that drops off the side of the hill that ties into the city sewer down below. There was a leak in it. It was difficult to get at and repair. And we're working with engineering to redesign the pathway of it. There's actually an old access road that we're going to try to get it in. Working on Sand Canyon Sewer, getting it out of the river. You're well aware of that. Smythe Drive is another PVC replacement that will follow the Dickinson one. That are getting ready for construction. As I mentioned, Valencia Marketplace is going to go out to bid. Dickinson Drive, same thing. So the Henry Mayo Newhall, that one came up because they're revising the roadway. I think they're adding like a turn pocket or something. And so we need to relocate our pipeline. So as a result, we have to do a pipeline replacement. And so that's one of those unexpected that come up that we have to have at least some placeholder dollars for in events like that. And Poe Parkway as well. There was a leak in a pipeline that cut through the property line of two homes. So what we're going to do is we're going to abandon that. Courtney's team actually did some hydraulic modeling, found a location that our crews now can go in and make another connection. We maintain the fire flow, we maintain the redundancy, and we maintain the flow of the path flow of water. So it's another collaborative project. Next slide, please. And then there's everything else operations. And it requires limited engineering support, meaning if a pump fails, we just go replace the pump. We don't need to have an engineer come in and design it or something like that. Or if a tank needs to be recoded, we work with our coding team and they provide the specifications. We create the RFP, meaning the operations group creates the RFP and we go out to bid. And then there's always a portion of the budgets for those unexpected. We do have pump and motor replacement programs, but we also have unexpected failures that happen. And we need to make sure we have some funds associated with that. And there's just some pictures. The one in the upper left or the left is, I think that's SC5. It actually looks much better than that now. The staff went out there and did some maintenance and painting and cleaning. And then there's some variety of things. The one in the middle, that's the Sand Canyon pump station. You got your PFAS machine there. And then there's just a picture of tank coating. Next slide. So the operations CIP is a little more modest than the engineering CIP. It's a modest $10 million. We include things less than a million because if we didn't, our list would be really small. And I'm not going to go over every one of these, but I do have some specific ones. But if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer. Next slide. So one of the main ones is tank recoding. So we have over 102 tanks. And I put a little footnote. This includes our recycled water tank, our concrete reservoir, and the plant water tank that sits up on the hill here. Because we got in a little discussion, Courtney and I. He goes, no, we don't have 102. I said, yeah, we do. because I include everything when we count our tanks, because they all need maintained to be maintained. So we have to include them. We do dive inspections every 3 to 5 years. That's per AWWA recommendations. And then that determines which tanks we need to recoat or at least go out for bidding to get recoated. And if you can see, some pictures are showing just what happens when you have steel that's coated and it's a moist environment. You eventually do get some rusting, you get some coating peeling away and such. So next fiscal year, two key projects are going to be Dean tanks, one Dean tank and the recycled water tank as well. Next slide. We did get some exciting news the other day. Our grant came in for the meters. That's a $2 million grant that we were able to get from the federal government. So yeah, that was a really nice surprise email we got the other day. So we replace meters routinely as an asset because they have a shelf life, just like with anything else. And so in general, we replace approximately 3,700 meters, our staff, every year. So in order to get this grant, we needed to speed things up a little bit and we needed to hire a contractor to come out and help us. And so those 5,000 is the grant proposed area. So this coming year, we're going to have close to 9,000 meters replaced in our service area. And these 5,000 are currently walking routes, meaning the staff has to go out and walk and lift the lid and bend down and all that sort of stuff. These are the remaining manually read meters. So after this, we will have no more manually read meters, which is a great thing. And we can really get on to more maintenance. And the area, that's just a little picture. The area, if you're not familiar with this, it's like North Park, North Bridge area above Decorah. Next slide, please. I also included all of our wells. We have 55, and that includes what are inactive. We have a couple that are not potable, right? So we have some just irrigation-only wells. I included all of them because they all need to be maintained. The well rehabilitation criteria is either specific capacity. There's a bunch of things. Specific capacity, the production, the age. And then what we're also doing is we're taking advantage with the PFAS treatment design. Engineering's taking the lead on those rehabs and rehabilitating the wells if they need it. And some key projects for next year is Saugus 1, well 160, and the Gita well. And we're also working on renaming wells too, because everybody had their own names, and we're going to come up with something that's consistent among the one and only agency in the Valley, SCV Water. Next slide, please. The last one is equipment replacements. And there's a number of drivers, but regulatory requirements are going to be hitting us soon. And so that's the reason why we have a pretty robust budget for equipment. Now, as Courtney mentioned, some of these will definitely slide. We have on order 6 vehicles that were placed, I think, in November, and we just got word they're probably not going to come, sorry, Rochelle, until after July 1. So the reason I say sorry is because we weren't able to spend the money in this fiscal year and it has to roll to next. There's just a long lead time on a lot of these vehicles and equipment. But as you can see, we have a ton of equipment and vehicles, 115 vehicles, 31 are greater than 10 years or older. There's just some of the statistics here. We have some backhoes, but we also have some older ones that need to be replaced. Our new, I don't know if all of you have gotten a chance to meet our new fleet and warehouse supervisor, Jesus Ramirez, but he's doing a tremendous job keeping track of all of this inventory. He's also renaming all of our vehicles, so there's no more letters S, V, or N. It's going to be SCV1 and SCV2. I have to keep promoting the One Water vision. So I think, yeah, that's it. Next slide. And I'll hand it back to Courtney. Thank you.
Yeah, one of the additions we have from the E&O budget is actually looking at the rest of the budget, which is administration, technology, and then, of course, water resources. So in the administration technology section, a couple of the highlights is the chiller replacement, the single largest item for them. And it was basically general maintenance and a chiller replacement. The chiller itself has a very long lead time. So We want to make sure that we have a new chiller ready to go before we have failure on the other one. And we are currently down to running on one compressor. Although the laboratory and the computer room, both have their own AC. They are also dependent on the general compressor for the rest of the building. And so they would not necessarily be able to keep up if we were to lose that AC unit. So they're looking at replacing that. And then, of course, we have the technology improvements. There's always upgrades to computers and servers and various items of technology. Several of those are challenging to get and take a long lead time as well. So we're hoping to get the budget approved so we can do some pre-planning on our technology improvements. We don't have a lot of slides on these because, again, this was mainly designed for our E&O meeting. But next slide, please. So these are the water resources budget, approximately $11 million in there. And again, a lot of these has to do with some of the water banking and water agreements that you talked about earlier. The largest expenditure under the capital planning and studies are the Buena Vista, Rosedale, Rio Bravo program and the Resiliency Master Plan, which are typically referred to as a resiliency initiative. The BVRRB expenditure covers a portion of the 11 acre feet we purchase annually from these agencies. The resiliency initiative covers the investment the agency is making to conduct an integrated resource management analysis that considers stressors such as climate change on recycled water, groundwater, and imported supplies. Conservation, while considering the ecological values primarily along the Santa Clara River. Other costs in this category are related to planning for implementation of projects in response to the groundwater sustainability plan and control of invasive species in Santa Clara River. Next slide, please. So this concludes the PAYGO portion of the budget, which is what is being approved today. The additional slides are for clarity. We have several more projects, some of which are from a prior bond issuance. The rest of the project list will need to have funding discussed and determined at a separate meeting. Funding considerations can include grants, SRF funds, using reserves, or additional bonds at the board's discretion. As you can see by this slide, we have about $18 million remaining on the existing bond, and you'll see that leaves us a total of about $21 million unfunded this year. And obviously, when you're looking at bonds or other funding sources for regional projects, you want to look out into multiple years. And that's why that will be taken care of at another meeting. Next slide, please. So the other projects we have listed on the alternate funded CIP, we have a total of almost $42 million in these projects. Several of these projects are in line for grants, which can be part of the future board discretion, as well as we have options generated from the LARC project, which we'll talk about later, that would give us an opportunity for zero interest and low interest loans to cover some of the other projects. These are mostly regional projects, and they therefore are good to be considered as an alternate sort of source of revenue or alternate source of funding. Next slide, please. So going into the project specific, this is a treatment plant project to improve the efficiency of the Earl Schmidt treatment plant. This has already been approved by the board and construction is starting this June. This is only a portion of the budget. This project will actually carry into next year as well. Next slide, please. So this is the Magic Mountain 6B pipeline and reservoir. And I say that as we are changing the name because we are doing a new naming convention for the reservoirs as well. And the reservoirs will be named by the roadway that accesses those reservoirs. So this will be the Telemark Reservoir. Probably still going to call it Magic Mountain 6B pipeline though. At least for now, until we do a new naming convention for pipelines. This is a proposed regional emergency storage reservoir and pipeline. And the pipeline is nearing completion and the reservoir we're working on design. Next slide, please. So well 201 VOC groundwater treatment, we are nearing design completion of this project. And one of the last steps is working with the city of Santa Clarita on some screening details. We would like to be able to hopefully this year go into construction on this project, and we will produce about 3,200 acre feet per year of potable water. Next slide, please. This is one of the projects where we have potential for grant funding on a recycled water project. So we're trying to get that to come through, but we still need to make sure it's budgeted to keep the project on the books. The by using recycled water, we free up additional potable water supplies. So this is also an important resource for us to have to maintain local potable water supplies. Next slide, please. This Castaic Conduit, we mentioned this before, and this is a small segment of crossing underneath the river. The primary reason we need to focus on this part of the project rather than the remaining part of the Castaic Conduit at this time is because we have easements constraints on this project. The easement would require us to complete it this fiscal year, or the easement may go away and we'd have to renegotiate for a new easement. So we are working diligently to do both, get this project approved and move it forward, and also negotiate for an extension on the term of the easement in case the project extends beyond this current fiscal year. Next slide, please. Lastly, this is the LARC project, our Los Angeles Residential Community Project, and it's an extension of a pipeline up Bouquet Canyon Road. We have grant funding for this existing project, but we also want to, or for this proposed project, but we also want to expand the pipe to 12 inch to be able to serve existing residents along this alignment. This is not for an expansion of the customers along there. If there is another development that were to come into this area, they would have to do a water study and would be responsible for any of the costs to upsize the pipe any further than they currently have. Currently, we don't have any of those projects on the books. This project is also, as a state grant-funded project, makes us eligible for zero interest loan, as well as up to $10 million in SRF funds for other projects. So that will be part of the future discussion on how we fund some of these projects. With that, we will transfer back to Rochelle. Next slide, please. And she will cover the rest of the budget part.
So this is just a quick recap of the operating budget and process that is being considered tonight. We had our F&A committee meeting that reviewed the budget in detail. And we also presented the financial results to the full board at a previous meeting. And we were just asked to come back today to discuss the capital in a little bit more detail before the budget was considered for approval. So on this slide, this is the process in which the forecast and the cost of service study was developed. If we're looking at the far right column under revised and going from top to bottom, this is a simplified summary to view the major functions in order to determine the amount of PAYGO CIP funds that are generated from all operating revenue sources. So looking at the revised fiscal year 22-23 budget, we take our total revenues from all operating sources, $148.5 million. We subtract our operating departmental expenses. We subtract our annual debt service payments. We factor in any amounts transferred in from any other funds. And that equals our amount of CIP PAYGO funds that are available in the current year. Any planned CIP PAYGO projects will come from other funds and carry over unspent funds from the current year. So after all of this is calculated, we can afford $21.2 million PAYGO projects out of our all of our operating revenues. Next slide. This is just showing our balanced operating budget. If we're looking at the far right column in the darker blue for the revised fiscal year 22-23 budget, We have a balanced budget of $148.5 million of inflows, which include water sales, property tax, and other revenue sources, and $148.5 million in outflows, which is our departmental operating expenses, our debt service, and the portion of the PAYGO CIP that is available to be funded by the inflows. So funds available for PAYGO, as I mentioned earlier, are $21.2 million. Next slide. So this is our unrestricted cash position. This is the pro forma, which is also in the budget. This is a very summarized version. So the cash budget starts with the beginning cash balance. We subtract the reserves to get the cash available. Those are the top two lines. And then we add the cash inflows, subtract the cash outflows for the period to calculate the ending cash balance. This is shown in more detail in the financial summary, and it's on page 65 of your packet tonight. We are projecting to end fiscal year 22-23 with approximately $33.3 million. And that balance can be used to offset any lost revenues due to water conservation or used to fund a portion of CIP in future years. At the bottom, those last two rows, we estimate if customers were to conserve the full 20% that was going to the stage two drought initiative, the impact to revenues is only nets 15% since we built 5% into our rate study. For the full year, if customers conserve that additional 15% for the full year, the revenue loss has been calculated at about $8.5 million. The lost revenues can be recovered from the reserves or reduce the unrestricted cash position as shown in the slide. Next slide. Just a couple changes from the last presentation. We did add, as Courtney mentioned, we added $600,000 to the CIP under administration. That was for the chiller replacement that came up after our last presentation. On the pro forma on page 65, we just did a couple wording changes from bond loan proceeds of that estimated $75 million issue to some kind of forecasted funding. And then we also added language that we talked about at the board meeting to the resolution that acknowledges that any debt financing required to pay for the approved capital plan will require separate board approval. Next slide. And the recommendation, the board of directors to approve a resolution revising the fiscal year 22-23 budget, with noting that in reviewing and we will select funding alternatives for the capital improvement plan. And that completes our presentation.
Thank you, Rochelle. Thank you, Courtney. Thank you, Mike. We don't often get a presentation of this breadth across the full agency. Gives us a greater, by the way, even though it's somewhat of a Reader Digest version, it does give us an appreciation of how much work is going on, how much our staff is into on a continual basis, from operations to CIP to administration. So with that, I know we have one comment card, April, and that is Cam Noltemeyer. Ms. Noltemeyer, if you'd like to come to the podium and make your public comment.
Cam Noltemeyer, yes. My question is on page 41, PFAS treatment. This is something that I've been following for years. And you're talking about the NWELS. I'm very familiar with that site. And it's right next to a little baseball playing fields, where you are also dumping all the residue from this treatment right into the river there. And none of it, you have your treatment plant there, but you have to go and see the residue that comes off of that. It's pretty ugly. And they're just dumping it back where it would go back, right next to what is the dry river right now, but usually is a river. And we've complained about this. I'm working with another agency. And we find this questionable that you spend so much money like on this and treating it, but how much are you spending to find out the source of it? I can never get an answer to that. There are sources. And it seems to me you should be collecting a lot of money from those sources to pay for this, but also dumping the residue right next to what, if we ever get rain again, is a river. It is the, and I, my understanding is that one of those wells was told to shut down, but it hasn't. If you know that site, you will know that there are two N wells there, and there's another one inside the treatment plant itself. And apparently they have to run that. That is the one that was asked to shut down, but they won't because apparently they need it to run the other ones. I don't know. We're not getting any straight talk. But this, it concerns me, because especially when you go down there and you look at how much you're spending to treat those the way you are. And then later on, we're going to suffer for it from what you're dumping into the river. It doesn't make any sense to me. And here your estimated costs are $5.4 million, $10.9 million. That's for PFAS treatment. Have you ever done the real source of your PFAS treatment? Where it's coming from?
Thank you, Ms. Noltemeyer.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comment, Ms. Noltemeyer. I don't have any other public comment cards. Do we have anybody online that wants to comment, April?
We do not.
Very good. That concludes public comment. Open it up for board discussion on the presentation we've received on the revised budget. Are there any other questions? Or Director Gusek, go ahead.
I'd like to see if the staff can answer that issue of, is the PFAS treatment dumping residue in the river? Do we have anybody that is knowledgeable on that treatment system?
We are not dumping residue from the treatment plant.
Thank you. I didn't think so. I do know there's water in the area, and I bet you know where that's coming from, because I ride my bike along there and there is a couple sources of water, but I didn't think it was from that.
If you'd like me to expand, I can.
You don't need to, but there's other water there, but it's not our water. Okay. You can do this 2 cents.
So you normally discharge wells prior to putting them in the system. And so it is clean drinking water that is going into a discharge basin.
Just so you know, Director Gutzeit, these questions have been raised numerous times and they've been responded to numerous times. So,
okay, well, thank you. I just hadn't heard it before, so I wanted to
check. No, I understand
now
that.
Now I have. Thank you.
All right. Are there any other questions or discussion from the board? Director Atkins, sir.
Thank you, President Martin. First question is for Courtney Mail. On the sewer line project here, was relining considered?
Yeah, we looked at it. We did a video of the pipeline and considered whether or not relining would work. There are many, many routes and other impactful items in that wouldn't be viable for relining. So okay, we have to replace.
It's basically ruined and needs to be replaced.
Yes.
Okay. And then the second question would probably be for Colonel PFAS. I gave him a promotion, by the way. Is actually not related to PFAS, but those AMI meters, and you talked about us going through 3,700 meters, and it would replace these manually read meters with AMI radio read meters. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, so we have what approximately 73,000 service connections. 5,000 are manually read. We're currently reading close to 23,000 through AMI, which doesn't require drive-by. And then I should be able to do the math quickly, but I'm not going to. The rest of those are AMR, which is drive-by.
Driving. Okay.
So as the AMR continue to fail, we are replacing them with additional AMI.
So it's internet-based. Is that how we read these meters then?
So there's antenna and transmitters that send a signal back through an FCC license. So
it's kind of it's not a drive-by, it's a radio read.
Correct.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
That's proper use of technology, and I appreciate staff's work. Thank you, Mr. Mail, for the answering.
Director Bromstein.
I just want to congratulate you guys on getting that grant money for the meters in. That was really exciting.
Sure, Fowler, all the way.
So I just wanted to thank you guys for that.
Is that it, Director Bronstein? Thank you. Director Armitage.
Thank you. I want to say thank you to Ms. Patterson and Mr. Campbell. Last time around when we were supposed to discuss this, you spent a lot of time answering many, many questions for me. So thank you again for that. I'll piggyback on what Director Bronstein just said, and I did a woo-woo on page 42 under the grants line item that shows that we're anticipated to more than double the amount of grant funds coming in to be used. So that's really exciting to me, and thank you for all the hard work that the team is doing to do that. And I want to say I appreciate the language added to the resolution that states that the debt financing for approved capital plan will require a separate board action and vote. So thank you for that. And then you touched upon connection fees in the budget. And there's been some discussion very recently, I think even at, was it yesterday's committee meeting? My days are blending together. But I was glad to hear about plans to start the process that will allow the connection of the retail capacity fees for the Valencia division, since that was a question that I had after it was brought to our attention that historically that had not been collected. So my one and only question for this item is, will that impact the 22-23 budget?
Yeah, the process to do those, our anticipated schedule is we wouldn't have a new capacity fee study complete until December. We would take it to a F&A committee meeting in January, try to get approval in February, most likely working with our working with the development community. We would have a grace period or some notification period, but that would be up to the board at that time. So at best, maybe a quarter of the time or a quarter of the fiscal year. It was not factored into these budgets.
I mean, it can only help, right? Because it'll bring in more revenue.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Director Ozahowski.
Yeah, this is not a request, just a suggestion for the new nomenclature for tanks. Could we use commissioning dates? Either a 6 number or 8 number. Again, not a request, just a suggestion. That's all. Again, thank you for the presentation. Great effort on all the departments. I certainly like the collaboration between operations, engineering, and the finance team. Back to you, President Martin.
Very good. Thank you, Director Ozahowski. Any other questions or discussion from the board? For this side, looks like we're clear. Director Colley.
I very much appreciate the fire hose today. A lot of information. I really wish I knew more. Like, for example, it looks to me like we've got about $6.5 million budgeted to replace PVC pipes from the historic retailer. And one of the things I wonder about that specifically is when something, well, we've been told in the past that one of the causes of the failures may be overbelling. And it would seem to me that if we replace the pipe, we probably, hopefully, don't make the same mistake again. And so what I'm kind of trying to figure out is at what point will these failures, all of the problems be resolved, and now we're replacing all of the fixed and all of the historically still good. And just trying to figure out how can we make that determination that we're not replacing something that is now fully fixed and fully functional. And I don't know that, I guess maybe I'm asking you just to read a crystal ball and there's a possibility. Do you want to comment on that first?
Sure. All the problems will never be resolved. It's operations. All the PVC problems will eventually be resolved because we will replace them with ductile iron pipe. So the issue of potentially overbelling, high pressure, there's a variety of issues associated with that PVC. It's a particular year we've identified. We've actually sent out samples of pipe that we've replaced already to, I can't remember the name of the firm, but Courtney sent me the information and they gave us a report. It's DR25 class, primarily 14 inch. I don't want to jinx myself, but we haven't had a PVC failure in a long time, in a couple of years. If the ops guys heard me, they'd probably get upset. But anyway, so what we've done is we've identified, with the assistance also of Chris Perez's team in GIS, identified the locations. And so we've really narrowed it down to about 10 main areas between 85 and 1990. You know, again, it's not a perfect science when it comes to this, but when our crews are replacing it, they're put in under very strict standards. With our engineering bidding projects and contractors, we will have inspectors on site that will make sure they follow those very strict standards, because it also could be inadequate bedding of the trench. There's a variety of issues. So I think that answers most of your questions.
So let me just ask, for example, okay, so I don't know the details, but I'm assuming the Dickinson, say, project that was on one of the slides. I'm assuming that's a PVC pipe.
Yes.
And that's something we're budgeting to replace.
Yes.
And while we've had, I know, failures in that area.
One failed twice.
Okay. I was actually the senior administrator on site at the high school when Valencia Water Company came and told me that they're going to shut my water off. And I told them they weren't. So they didn't. But anyway, I'm looking at that and saying, well, if it failed twice historically and it got fixed and we don't know, those may be the two weak spots, and we may be replacing pipe that would be good for another 50 years that may never fail again, and we're going to spend a few million dollars to replace it proactively. And so the question becomes, is that a good bet? Is that the best? Should we be doing it? And that's the kinds of questions that I've got on many of these projects.
So you're almost channeling Director Atkins, because I think I've had this same question in the past. And it is a bit of a crystal ball, because you only can go by what you know. And like I mentioned in the presentation, we look at age, we look at material, we looked at prior history. We're also looking at pumping routes. We made some modifications to some of the pumping routes. And I think that's why we're not seeing these catastrophic failures that we've seen early on in this new agency. The issue is you can replace it for, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact number, $3 million, whatever it was, or you can pay up to $500,000 or more in paving replacement from a failure. And that really doesn't, that money doesn't benefit us at all. So, you know, if you look at AWWA recommendations, they tell you how long the life of a pipe should be. We have approximately 920 miles. We should be on average replacing 12 miles a year, and we're nowhere near that. DWP, I think, is at 350 years for their full replacement schedule. So what we think we have a very targeted, somewhat conservative team that gets together and discusses these. We actually have monthly pipeline replacement inspection meetings with engineering, GIS, and operations. And we have these sort of discussions. And then we create a priority list. And so I don't know if that really answers your question, but I do think that these on this list are critical enough to require replacement at this time.
All right. I'm not going to try to go through in detail all of the different potential places, but my concern overall is that we're debt financing, looking to potentially do $75 million in debt financing over just a very few years. And I would prefer, obviously, not to continue debt financing at the level that we have been and anticipate doing. My preference has been for most of the 20 years I've been on this board to put sufficient money into the rates in order to do the maintenance and the upkeep that you're talking about. My preference would be right now to stall some of this work until we can get a new rate case and fund it more fully, not fund much more of it on a pay-go basis. So you know, that kind of scrubbing of these projects would be my preference. And I don't think it's I'm not going to stay here till midnight to try to do that now. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Conley. Director Atkins.
Thank you, President Martin. Mr. Chief Engineer, isn't pay-go, doesn't that mean pay as you go?
Yes.
Does that have anything to do with debt financing?
No, that's not part of this.
So the entire conversation in the outset of your remarks, you were talking about pay-go, and I wanted to commend you for saying that it was going to be the subject matter of our conversation and that it's likely, and I'm hoping it does, pervade the conversation of this board going forward. I think we should go more and more to PAYGO. So I guess after a fashion, I'm supporting Mr. Cawley or Director Cawley's remarks, but I just see us, the more we can do PAYGO, the less we do debt financing, the more we move towards being debt-free, a completely unheard of thing for a water agency, except for New Hope County Water District. We were almost there when we restructured governance. So I'm excited about the conversation, the tenor of the conversation and where we're headed. And I commend you for working within those parameters and trying to stay there and not do things on a debt finance basis and burden our ratepayers more. Thank you for that.
All right. I think we are at perhaps at less than another. Director Ford, go ahead, sir.
Quick question, but I want to thank you guys. Outstanding presentation. Tag teamed it well. My one question is on the solar, the electricity charges and in relation with the solar project. It says that the there's a caveat there about potential solar credits that may or may not be realized. I was just wondering, is that affecting this current fiscal year, next fiscal year, both fiscal years? What does it apply to?
Is this on the departmental budgets?
It's page 57. So you're right, it is Department Water Quality Treatment and Maintenance.
Is it on the PAYGO projects or expenses? Sorry.
It's on operating expenses. It's okay. The last line in the spreadsheet.
Okay. So that is it just energy we put? That's just our regular SCE. We do take offsets for the credits for the solar panels. Mm-hmm. But as we saw this year, we had a couple events which reduced the amount that we could generate to sell back to Edison, which reduced our credits. What we did this year is we anticipated, we just put in a small contingency in case the solar panels did go down a little bit. We made sure we had enough in the budget to cover any lag in production from the solar panels.
Okay. And the, as I recall, the purchase is debt finance, isn't it?
Yes, Michelle? It is.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much. And like I said, good job.
Thank you, Director Ford. One last comment before we ask for a motion on this item. First of all, again, follow up on my earlier comment. I appreciate that the breadth of the presentation gives us it's pretty impressive what our agency is able to do across the full width of the agency. And if I'm not mistaken, most of the CIP work is consistent with the five-year strategic plan that was approved when we became SCV Water. We will be entering into a new five-year strategic plan effort early next year. And so I think we can take input from some of the comments that have been made tonight and perhaps address future budgeting in accordance with whatever we decide for the next five-year strategic plan. But it is consistent with our strategic plan, and I appreciate what the staff has done to put this amended budget together. And with that, Director Kelly, would you like, as chair of the Finance Committee, to make a motion on this?
I definitely would like to make a motion on this. It's been something that's been bounced around, talked about, and re-educated, and so I'd be glad to make a motion to move this forward.
Second, Atkins.
We have a motion and a second. Unless there's any further board discussion or questions, Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Ozahofsky.
Yes.
Director Ford.
Yes.
Director Gutzeit.
Yes.
Director Planbeck. Sorry, Director Planbeck.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Atkins.
Yes.
Director Colley.
No.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
President Martin?
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass, and that's resolution number SCV-276.
Thank you, board. Thank you, staff. We could now move to item 8. This is a presentation by Keith Abercrombie on the local hazard mitigation plan presentation. Mr. Abercrombie.
Thank you, President Martin, members of the board. This evening, I'm going to give you a fairly brief, high-level flyover of a process that we have went through or still in to some degree in the creation of what's called a local hazard mitigation plan. Next slide, April. So this evening, I'm going to explain, you know, what the purpose of the plan is. Why are we doing it, and what's it going to accomplish for us? How did we develop the plan? What process did we put in place to do it? What risk do we as SCV Water face, and what are our capabilities to handle or mitigate those risks? We're going to look at some of the strategies that we might have come up with that help to mitigate those risks. We're going to talk about the plan and how we maintain that plan going forward to keep it viable. And then I'll briefly go over what the immediate next steps are. In other words, what happens after tonight over the next few months. Next slide, April. So federal regulations require a local hazard mitigation plan as a means of mitigating risk from local disasters and other hazards. The process requires the identification of hazards facing the local agency, in this case, SCB Water, requires the formulation of mitigation strategies to reduce the impact of these risks. And this effort, creating these strategies and performing mitigation, if you will, helps to break the wicked cycle of damage, restoration, repeated damage. And so that's the real gist behind a mitigation plan. One of the benefits of having an approved LHMP is that with this approved plan, we will be able to obtain grant funding from FEMA and other in the state for specific mitigation measure work. Next slide, April. So we began this process a long time ago, it seems like, but it was only a little over a year ago, early 21. We brought a consulting firm on board, Engineering Solutions Services, who specialize in LHMP development. We also created an internal SCB Water team. This internal team was made up of representatives from operations, water resources, communication, and safety. Early on in the process, the team reached out to other agencies in our area, specifically the City of Santa Clarita, the LA County Department of Public Works, the sanitation districts, LADWP and MWD. And we looked at the plans that those agencies had created. We also asked for input or advice that they might have for us in the process of us creating our plan. We had a effort to reach out to the community, to our customers. This involved numerous activities from press releases, the use of our SCB Water website, our newsletter, social media, and even customer bill messaging. Next slide, please. So next, we began to identify the hazards facing us. You know, FEMA has, as the federal government will, they have a very thorough program that you kind of follow as you develop these plans. And so they have a list of hazards that you are supposed to consider in your plan. And so we obviously looked at and considered those items, but we also looked at the public survey that we had conducted early on in this process to see what our community thought were big ticket items. And we also looked at historical events that had affected us as purveyors in this valley, as well as other entities in Southern California. The major hazards identified were some of the obvious things that would come to mind: earthquakes, wildfire, windstorm, dam inundation, flooding, and climate change-induced drought. Next, the team looked at the hazards through a screening assessment matrix. This involved evaluating our susceptibility to these hazards, determining how likely they were to happen, and understanding what the potential impacts were from them. In other words, were they catastrophic or just critical or limited? We then did an internal review of our capabilities as SCB Water to mitigate some of these hazards. And this involved looking at agency personnel, determining what their capabilities were, looking at our existing emergency planning efforts and programs, understanding the associations that we have with other emergency management departments, such as the city and county, their emergency departments, or the California Water Wastewater Agency Response Network, CalWARN. A few of the key takeaways from this project or from this effort were that we determined that we should continue training and using the knowledge from past disasters to further educate our workforce. that we should use our GIS system to help track and manage these mitigation efforts. That we should look for funding opportunities for these mitigation strategies, and that we should look to expand public outreach as we go down this path. Next slide, April. So now to the mitigation strategies. Our overriding goals were to avoid injury, loss of life, and damage to property, and to protect infrastructure that provides water service. Objectives were of a broader scale, such as adapting standards of design that would protect life, property, and critical infrastructure. An example of a focused mitigation strategy for this would be flexible pipe joints to protect against failure during an earthquake, as is depicted in this slide. So we went through each of the six main hazards that I previously mentioned, and we ultimately came up with a short list of mitigation strategies for each of them. Examples of these mitigation projects would include things such as seismic shutoff valves for tanks, improved emergency communication equipment, emergency water dip tanks for fire department access, additional system hydraulic interconnections, retaining walls, and improved drainage systems. These projects were given a priority, an estimated implementation timeline, an estimated cost range, and are assigned to a responsible department of SCV for implementation. Next slide, please. The final part of the plan development concerned the details of maintaining the plan. In other words, how do we keep the plan valid and maintain it over time? And specifically, the plan calls for an annual review of the of it so that we do that. It's also supposed to be used in the annual budgeting process as mitigation efforts are put forward and prioritized for implementation. And then every 5 years, a much more thorough and detailed update of the plan is required. This update would be resubmitted to Cal OES and FEMA for their review and reapproval. Next slide, April. So where are we now and what are the next immediate steps? Currently, the plan is out for public review. It's out, the comments would be due, I believe, May 30th. And after that time, staff and the team will take those comments, we'll reincorporate them and any suggestions or edits that need to be made to the plan. The plan at that point in time would be submitted to Cal OES for their review. They will take, we're told, anywhere from 3 to 5 months to review the plan. Likely come with a list of things to, you know, fix this or that, which we will do. And once we've done that, we will submit that plan to FEMA for their review and approval. FEMA will, again, possibly have edits or fix-its. We'll make those as soon as FEMA approves the plan. Then we will schedule to bring that approved plan back to this board for adoption. So that's, you know, best case, probably 6-7 months down the road. Next slide, April. And with that, be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Abercrombie, for the presentation. Thank you for all the work that went into this. Madam Secretary, do we have any public comment?
We do not.
We do not. Then we are open to board discussion on this item. Director Flanbeck.
Well, I'm really glad that we're doing this, whatever the impetus was. I think it's so important to really have thought things out before we're all in an emergency. But I wondered, are the, is, for instance, the fire response plan, is that going to be incorporated in this or is that a separate plan?
Those would be separate, like our emergency response plan and things like that are different. This isn't so much a plan of how to respond to an emergency, which those plans are, as this is a plan of how can we now do things to mitigate the impact of the emergency before it happens. Mm-hmm. So those other plans would tell us, okay, in the event of a wildfire or an earthquake, this is where people go and what people do. Whereas this document is telling us, all right, we have earthquake risk. It can affect, it can cause these problems or those problems. And so these are fixes we can put in place now. And this also gives us the opportunity to apply for grant funding to implement those fixes now prior to some catastrophe.
Do we have a lot of tanks that don't have flexible valves on them?
We have some. I don't know. Some of the older ones probably don't. A lot. And some of these things are steps that we've, you know, that we're doing already. You know, we're putting in seismic valves at tanks. We don't have them all the ones we want in yet, but we're doing that. We're putting in flexible couplings where we can and when we can. So there are a number of facilities that could still benefit from these types of mitigation efforts.
Yeah, having been in just elected to Newhall County Water District in 1993, right before the earthquake, one of the big problems was several tanks lost their water completely because they didn't have the flexible valves on them. And there was some in our water district and, of course, the Valencia tanks over there in Westridge area. So I think it's pretty sure we're going to have another earthquake. So I hope that's a priority.
It is. And we've and the, you know, seismic shutoff valves are another in some ways even better option for tanks. And we don't put those on every tank because we don't want all the tanks to have their water and there be no water anywhere else. But as you know, we have multiple tank sites where we have multiple tanks on that same tank site. So we could easily save the water in one or two tanks, let the other one or two be used or drained to waste, you know, if need be, in broken pipes. But so those are things that we are also working to implement.
Yeah, as long as they aren't directly below home, above homeowners, because that was another problem that we had, was when we lost the tanks, it flooded people out downhill from them,
right?
Which, of course, I'm sure you're looking at. So.
Yep.
Thank you.
Director Atkins, go ahead.
Keith, I remember former Director DiPremio. He was Valencia Water Company's general manager, and then he served here on the board of directors. And I know that he had articulated to me, and I probably articulated to you and maybe Mr. Courtney Mayo, and I know Mr. Alvord, the importance of the interconnections.
Mm-hmm.
What percent of the ones he had articulated or the ones you had contemplated, how many have been done? What percentage are we completed in terms of how are those interconnections going?
Well, I'm not sure I could give you a percentage. I don't know that I actually know all of the particular ones, you know, being talked about. I do know where we are today. We're looking at, we have a number of existing interconnections. There's still work to be done on some of those because the way the, when we were all separate entities and so forth, there were different permitting requirements with the Division of Drinking Water, and that some of these interconnections can only be used, you know, in certain situations and maybe not when there's an earthquake, for instance. And so, you know, we're working through those hurdles, but we are also, working on putting in interconnections now that we are one agency that will benefit all of our customers in the entire agency. And we have a couple of those that came to this board within the past year or so that are real close to being permitted. They're installed and completed, but the permitting from DDW is, I would say, probably a month away at most, hopefully. And so we are making progress in chipping away at it. And one of the efforts that the engineering group has underway currently is a master plan update. And that will look at things such as, you know, our entire system and help us understand the hydraulics and where it makes sense. So, you know, it's like Mike said with regard to problems and operations, that they never get solved completely. We may never solve this completely. There's always going to be something else to do, but we are on a path to keep chipping away at it. And the more we can put in place, just the more redundancy, as you know, we as a system have to better serve our customers.
And overall, are you comfortable with the number and extent of the interconnections we have now, or are we woefully inadequate? Are we well ahead of schedule? I'm just trying to understand where we are relative to what Mr. DiPrimio had articulated.
Well, we've come a long way since then. I mean, so there are a lot more interconnections in place, and just the fact that we're one agency, we have a lot more flexibility in how we can do things and move water around than we did as separate entities. I'm not satisfied where we are now, no. I mean, we know there's other areas that we could do things to improve our redundancy and everything, but I think we're on a path to get there.
Thank you, sir.
Director Ozahowski.
On page 94, we have some responses from our constituents. How many total responses do we get for this particular chart, this graph, roughly?
Do you know? I don't know the answer to that. Let me see if somebody else. I don't know if
it states that the full report is in Appendix C, but it was not attached to the report.
Yeah, Keith, I don't know off the top of my head, but we can get you the answer to that, Director.
Okay. I would appreciate it. Thank you. And then as far as these mitigation measures, it's my understanding that this report, after board approval, after FEMA approval, how do we plan to budget for it, and how do we plan to incorporate it into, I guess, not necessarily next year's budget, but the following budget? What's the plan of action on that?
Well, I mean, the process would be that the plan is continually kind of reviewed and evaluated. So prior to the budgeting cycle that we would be in for this next year, not the one you did tonight, but the next one, we would be, you know, staff would be looking at this thing and trying to determine, you know, which of these pieces can we do, which pieces make sense, do, you know, are these still valid and so forth. And so we would pick certain projects that we think are a priority and are doable. And then we would put forth those in our budget request for that next time period. And then that's a sort of a continual process. It would be looked at every year, and we would, you know, update this plan. You know, new things happen that might make certain of these projects not valid or not projects we want to do anymore. We may have new things that come up that here's a new hazard we hadn't thought about before that's a concern. And so we would be constantly evaluating that and updating it. But ultimately, you know, the rubber hits the road when we would put forth the projects for budgeting purposes.
Okay, and my follow-up question is, once we develop this report and FEMA approves it, and for whatever reason, we indicate some mitigation measures that we can't quite finance for that particular year, would we still be able to receive FEMA mitigation grant for a project that it may not come to fruition that year, but next year?
I believe so. I don't think all of the projects have to be a one-year sort of effort. I mean, some projects might be as complicated as building debris basins and canyons to keep a treatment plant from being flooded or something. So, you know, those don't happen in a year typically. So the other thing I would point out is there's no real commitment on us at this point to do any of these plans. These are just things that we think make sense, and they're really to be done to the extent we have funding. And that funding can come from FEMA grants or other places, but it's not really contingent or upon us to do these items until we have the funding to do them.
Okay. And last question, on page 102, there's a reference to a boil water notice that was sent out by our predecessor agencies. Do you or any of your staff remember how did that notice look like, and how was it communicated to our ratepayers to to the Valley and to Santa Cruz Valley residents?
Well, I don't recall the specific notice, but or this specific notice and so forth, but the standards for typically issuing boil order notices are fairly detailed and spelled out in our DDW operating permits. I mean, we have to essentially put notices in the public, you know, spaces, the media, the newspaper, the radio, TV, whatever. It also requires us to engage with regard to any means of contact we have with customers, whether it be email, letter, and so forth, to try to make immediate contact.
Okay, understood. Thank you. Back to you, President Martin.
President Martin, if I may.
Mr. Cole.
Through the wonders of technology and having a really top-notch public relations manager, I have the answer to Director Orzechowski's first question. So we had a total of 86 respondents to the survey.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. And thank you, Ms. Martin. Thank you, President.
All right. Director Cooper.
Thank you, President Martin. You know, I helped put together one of these plans with Metropolitan 20 some years ago. And it was pretty detailed, the plan that Met put together. And it's not just reservoirs and pipelines and tanks and treatment plants in looking at your potential for losing a treatment plant because of some simple things is very big. And all the tanks that you have within a treatment plant for chemicals, they're not built like the tanks that you have in the distribution system with flex tens on them. And but they move in an earthquake. I can tell you in the 94 quake, the tanks down at the Jensen plant when I was working there went up in the air 13 inches and were off the ground. And when they came down, the roof collapsed on them. So you have the potential of losing all of those as well. So expanding this into the treatment plants, real detailed of things that you need is important, as well as we also did the business operations of the company as well. If you hit at the time when you're doing payroll and you're doing billing for meters out into the system, do you have an alternate site that you can go to that you can operate these things? And so we built an alternate site in Eagle Rock so that Metropolitan's business administration could go there and operate and keep the business itself going. So, yeah, there's a lot of detail that can go in this, and it can go quite detailed. And I thank you for putting this together. I think this is a good project, and it really helped us in the 94 quake, having some of this put into play at that time, not all of it, but there are some real concerns, especially you don't want to lose a treatment plant. You don't want to lose a reservoir out there, but you don't want to lose a treatment plant as well. Thank you.
Dr. Goodside.
I was really excited to hear Director Cooper's comments, because I immediately thought of the chemicals that are used in the treatment, and some of that is nasty stuff, worse than losing a tank of water. I would think losing some of those chemicals straight. So really good points on that. And I actually had written down the comment of human capital. I was at the Anheuser-Busch plant in the earthquake hit, and I'm not at the plant, but their big issue was, you know, who needs to be in the plant, you know, come in, who needs to stay home, what are we going to do? And that was probably more an issue than the actual damage for that plant, was how they get so great comments. And I really like this plan because prevention and mitigation is always cheaper than response, especially under duress. As you may or may not know, I sent a lot of comments into Mr. Alvord, who was lucky enough to be listed as the contact. So I just emailed him and then emailed a second email. But, you know, maybe I can talk to you offline about that, because I did have some questions on, you know, what scope are we looking at? Because so much of our supply, you know, is a local versus state ride, right? We've always talked for years that earthquake affecting the aqueduct is going to be huge for us. Do we get to talk about that? Do we not get to talk about it? Short-term versus long-term, natural versus human-caused problems. You know, I'm not sure of the scope, and I'd like to know more. The other chunk of comments would be on data presentation, you know, consistent tone, depth, and references. So some of the maps have an overlay of our facility. Some of them don't. Some of the information was different than we heard in the drought forum. So if my comments were rambling, going to Mr. Alvord, we can call me or we can talk something.
We took your comments and we are going to review those with our team to consider what changes we can make to the plan.
Okay. And if I am off base or I don't understand the scope, let me know.
I mean, the one thing you said that I would flag is that the focus of a LHMP is purely natural hazards or events.
Okay. Human
issues, people doing things, that's not part of this terrorism, effort. Whatever. Right.
Okay. Okay. Well, yeah, so that's, and maybe we can say that, you know, if it's in there, or I think it isn't actually in there. I saw natural in there.
Yeah, once, I mean, it could be reinforced, yes, so that it's clear. Because
right, we only, you know, looked at these things because, sure, you know, a lot of that is on everybody's mind lately.
Sure.
Any other, Dr. Armitage?
Thank you.
Thank you,
thank you, Mr. Abercrombie, to you and your team for this. I found this to be really interesting to read, and I can see that a lot of work went into it. I'm particularly interested in knowing that we are thinking about the mitigation of hazards and building a emergency response plan and how it's going to be implemented going forward. I think that's probably because I come from public health. I spent a number of time in the public health field. So my mind always goes to wanting to know how we are going to minimize effects to people's health and safety as we make these types of decisions and come up with these plans. And I also happen to be married to and share my life with someone whose career is responding to hazardous situations and emergencies. So I think my mind is like hyper-focused on this. So I do have some questions. I'm going to try to motor through them quickly so I don't take up too much time. On page 79, there's a table that's a facility vulnerability list. And I noticed that our solar panels that we now own aren't listed anywhere in the facilities. And nor is it mentioned towards the back of the document under like the windstorm events. There's a section on that. So I don't know if it would be appropriate to add that or not, but I thought I'd just bring that up. I had a question about the comments that were coming in about this plan. I'm hoping we're getting comments in from the public. I think that would be great. And I'm just wondering if at some point the board will be able to see those comments. I would be interested in seeing those. Okay, moving through. You talk about how the hazards were ranked on table 9 on page 20 of the document. So it looks like you explained that you had a system of ranking, and I obviously was not part of that group who was part of that discussion. So I come from a less informed place right now, but I still want to share my sentiment that I was surprised to see wildfire ranked as a 2, as well as climate change induced drought. I just feel like living in Santa Clarita, and if you look at the map and the table that's later on in the document, it shows that we've had at least one significant wildfire, but I know we get more than one a year come through our community. So I guess I'd be interested in learning more about why that was ranked a 2. And then climate change induced drought, I feel like we're living it now. So I don't know why that one's ranked a 2 as well. So I'd be curious to know about that more at another time. And then the same thing on the page 21 of the document, similar kind of comment where climate change induced drought and wildfires, I feel like they just need to be moved up to highly likely, just because I feel living in the community, it feels like it's definitely a highly likely event. Okay. Also, the way climate change is written, it's written like in the future tense, like climate change will. And I feel like that needs to be changed to the present tense because, again, we're living this now. We're feeling the effects of it now. So I would prefer to see that acknowledged as something that we're going through presently. Yeah, I already made that comment. Trying to consolidate. Just want to make the comment that I was really happy to see that SCV Water is collaborating with other mutual aid or getting into mutual aid agreements with other agencies. That's very reassuring to me to know that that's happening. So thank you for mentioning that. Also, I'm wondering, are board members able to get a copy of the emergency response plan, or is that like super secret information?
I don't know. Will, I think this question came up, but I don't remember what the answer was. So,
okay. If you decide it's something that board members are able to read, I'd love to see a copy of that too. And then I'm interested in knowing how often the safety trainings are done on the emergency response plans. I'm almost done. Similarly, I was glad to see that staff is participating in trainings with other agencies or regional governments. I know one of the Aqua Spring Conference sessions I went to was an agency was sharing their experience that they recently had with the wildfires up in the Tahoe region. And I think they had some really great information to share that other agencies could really benefit from. So it sounds like you're starting to do that with other agencies as well. And I think that's very, very valuable. So thank you for mentioning that. Just a couple more things and then I'm done. Towards the end, you have tables for each type of hazard in which you show priority, implementation timeframe, estimated cost, and responsible department. Consistently through all of them, you show that communication equipment interoperable with the county is listed as a medium priority. And I'm wondering why it's not high, because I feel like if we are in a disaster mode, communication with other folks in the county and in other parts of the community is going to be really key. So I'd be interested to know why that's not high. And then last one, thank you for sticking with me, everybody. For the dam inundation section, I'm just wondering for those of us on the Public Outreach and Legislation Committee, because I know we see funding opportunities now coming through the bipartisan infrastructure law framework, that there's money coming for dams. So I'm wondering, and this may not be our place, so you can tell me, but I'm wondering if we can advocate for funding for assessing for weaknesses in the dams that are identified in this plan as being able to affect our community in a bad way, and see if perhaps if they need repairs or reinforcement, if that's something that we can advocate for. And I'm done. Thank you.
Okay. I think I got them all. I will see what we can do. I would say to one of your points about training with outside agencies, just to sort of give our safety team, Joe and Aaron, a pat on the back. Just today, in fact, they held a training session that we instigated where we had, I think, three or maybe four fire stations from our area with about 3 to 4 people from each station come to up here for about half a day today where we could explain what we are and show them inside the treatment plant. One of the captains who had been here 30 years says, I've never been inside there before. And so I said, well, it hasn't ever caught on fire. So of course not. But so anyway, we are doing things like that, which I think speak to that point. And that was something that those two guys put together on their own. They have two more sessions this week to more or less canvass the entire valley, all the fire departments. So I just wanted to give them a congrats for that.
Speak again, go ahead.
To add to what Director Armitage said, one of the things that I think that probably you're aware of this if you're coordinating with fire departments, but they said it was very important to coordinate with the fire departments about who is going to be the contact person and what your most important facilities are during wildfire. So, and they said that, you know, if you don't do that, you can really run into some trouble because they don't know what they need to protect. They're not water people. So probably if you're meeting with fire departments, you're already doing that. But I think it was from, was it from the Las Virgenes guy where they said they had just, I don't remember. They had a really good presentation. I turned some notes in on it.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Director Planbeck. Director Ozahosky.
Please thank the safety team for initiating that conversation with the fire department. Really appreciate that.
Will do.
Thank you, President Martin.
Very good. Did you want to say, Director Atkins, go ahead.
I just noticed this and I wanted to ask Mr. Abercrombie. I'm looking at the section on earthquake vulnerability, 4.4.1, it's page 128 in the package. And it says population, approximately 100% of SCV water is vulnerable. So that means in terms of earthquake vulnerability, anywhere in the Santa Cruz Valley, we're vulnerable.
Yes.
Why couldn't that same comment be on each one of these? Because it's not on inundation. In other words, what percentage of each of the area, what percentage of Santa Cruz Valley is vulnerable to each of these natural disasters? Because it's not 100% 100% of the time.
Sure. First of all, what we are talking about here is being vulnerable is
facility, yes.
SCV water.
Okay.
And so an earthquake could potentially impact
everything,
every facility.
I get that.
Dam inundation would not. We actually have maps in here that show where these various dams, assuming there was water behind the dam when it failed, that it would flood these areas out and it would wipe out these facilities, but not all of our facilities. Even wildfire doesn't catch everything in the highest category.
Exactly why I'm saying what area of our facilities is vulnerable. It's in there for earthquakes, but it's not in there for wildfire. It's not in there for inundation. It is maps. I'm saying just make it a comment, a data point.
Got it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Abercrombie. I'd like to move along, but I want to say that certainly the first step towards addressing these hazards is awareness of what they are. And this is certainly a very comprehensive document. I would ask directors that if you spend more time with the document, you have further things you'd like to comment on, feel free to send them in to staff or give them a call, and they would certainly appreciate hearing more from us. But at this point, I would like to move on. By the way, April, do we have any public comment on the presentation?
We do not.
Very good. With that, we can move to item 9, General Manager's Report on Activities, Projects, and Programs. I'm not sure, Mr. Stone, are you going to make a presentation tonight?
I am.
Very good. We're anxious to hear from you.
In the fading light that I have in this particular room, I will do my best. So I've got some notes written down. It's been a busy few weeks since the last time the board met. In early May, I had an opportunity along with Steve and Courtney, and we did kind of a co-visit with the city on a couple of issues to host Senator Feinstein's field representative, Marco Enriquez, to tour a few areas. I believe that the city took him out to look at the CEMEX area, and Steve had a tour of Arundo, and then I joined them for a tour of the Valley Center PFAS treatment facility. So we had a chance to brief him about what that was all about, what the larger context was of our challenge in the community to bring on treatment to make sure that we're serving water below the response level in California. Talked a little bit about some of the other issues in terms of obviously funding and longer term, what's going to happen with CERCLA, and wanting to not inadvertently have CERCLA turn water providers into technical polluters. So that needs to be handled carefully. As did a number of members of the board and some of our team, Steve and Kathy and I were at Aqua the first week of May. And that was I think a pretty good experience. Was a little daunting seeing that many people in one place. And not everybody got out unscathed, but I'm pleased to report it looks like everybody is okay now, but COVID was around. And but notwithstanding that, there were some excellent opportunities to catch up with colleagues, hear some, I thought, very good panels. Aqua is always, the challenge is they run four different tracks in parallel for most of the panel times. So you're always making horrible choices about, gosh, I want to hear this, but this is going on too. And that's where I think having the board members go and share their thoughts in their AB1234 reports and their remarks is helpful. Appreciate Kathy had shared some of her remarks and insights from her visit in our one-on-one meeting last week, and glad she touched on that again tonight. Our staff put together, I thought, a really a nice drought forum for the community with a lot of Q&A, and took a lot of time, I thought, in that effort. I think it's one of those things that's it's going to be a iterative work in progress. There's a lot of different channels for communication, some of it outward, some of it inward, and I think hearing comments and questions was just as valuable for us to kind of understand where either we're connecting or not connecting in the communication side. And I know Kathy will be using that insight to continue to hone what we communicate, talk about. I was going to mention the meter grant, but Mike beat me to it, but that's okay. That's a really exciting thing. As you recall, we didn't quite make it the cut last year. And so we used what we learned from the opportunity to talk with the Bureau on how to strengthen our grant approach. And that paid off. And I really want to thank and acknowledge the team that worked on that. And we will probably be applying for an additional grant in next year's Water Smart program, see if we can leverage our success and the name recognition, I guess, from working on a couple of years worth of grant applications there. And I think that's probably the major items I would cover tonight. I'm trying to think if there was one more item, but I don't seem to see it in my notes here. So we'll leave it at that. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Madam Secretary, do we have any public comment on Mr. Stone's report?
We do not.
Very good. We can open up to board questions or comments. Anybody like to weigh in on Mr. Stone's report? I don't see any at the moment. Thank you, Matt, for your report. We can move on to item 10, President's report. And the first thing I'd like to mention is what I didn't mention earlier is the blue notebook at your place is your new director policy notebook to take home and replace what you have with this. And it will be a living document, and you probably get updates along the way on that. That's what it is. An update on
Outside of the agency conferences and events, Public Officials Night on May 19, 2022, which is coming up this week, in 2 days to be precise, at 5:30 at the California Institute of the Arts. It's a very nice program. In response to that, the Public Outreach Committee meeting was canceled, which was scheduled for the same night. I unfortunately will be out of town, not able to attend. So I hope those that do attend enjoy it and take the time to reach out to your fellow elected officials from Santa Clarita. The 2022 Economic Outlook is going to be on September 9th at 8 a.m. at the College of the Canyon Performing Arts. An update on upcoming regular and special board meetings. All the following regular special board meetings will begin at 6 p.m. There'll be a special board meeting on May 24th, Sustainability Plan Board Workshop. This will be an interactive workshop. There will be a regular board meeting on June 7th, a regular board meeting on June 21st, and a possible special board meeting at the end of June regarding the Water Resiliency Initiative. Please make sure you respond to the board secretary when she reaches out for your availability. Upcoming committee meetings for the month of June. The location is Summit Circle in the Engineering Services Section Conference Room, formerly known as the Training Room. June 2nd, Engineering and Operations at 5:30. June 8th, Water Resources and Watershed at 5:30. June 16th, Public Outreach and Legislation Committee at 5:30. And that concludes the committee meeting updates. There is one more. June 20th, the Finance and Administration Committee at 5:30. That one will be right here in the Rio Vista Treatment Plant. Board and training room. And that concludes item 10. Madam Secretary, do we have any public comment on item 10?
We do not.
Very good. Unless there's any questions from the board or discussion, we can move on to item 11, AB 1234 reports. There were five AB 1234 reports that were included with your packet and four additional reports that were posted to the website and emailed out. Does anyone have an additional AB 1234 report tonight? Director Armitage.
Thank you. I have two more that I had after I initially submitted my written ones. On May 10th, I had my one-on-one with General Manager Stone, and we spent a good amount of time discussing things that we had learned at the Aqua Conference. And then on May 12th, I participated in a meeting of the board of the Special Districts Association of Northern Los Angeles County. That was virtual. And we continued planning for the next general membership meeting that will take place probably either June 22nd or 24th. So more information will be coming about that. And my first meeting on May 10th with General Manager Stone was virtual. Thank you.
Any other AB 1234s? Director Bronstein.
I was at the Aqua Conference as well, but on the agenda here, it says that I submitted an AB 1234, which I did not.
No, that's for other people who did submit it. So yours wasn't on there.
Yeah, because it says Bronstein on the line under 11.3.
I list everybody who did attend.
Okay.
And then if you don't turn in a report, then you have to do a verbal. So anybody who attends any meetings that I set up, I list them all. So you guys remember you need to report. Okay. And there were others that did report. That's why there's a star.
Okay. And I just want to make sure that was clear. I will be turning one in. I just, you know, was sick, but unscathed. Nope.
Director Kelly.
I did attend the Aqua Conference. I have not done a written report. I was one of those lucky people that came away with something extra. But I get my strength back and I'll follow up with a written report. But basically, the conference was an excellent conference, had about 1,100 people in attendance. The exhibitor hall was a little light, but I think after some of the confusion with Pasadena, and talking to most of the people, it looks like it's going to come back strong. So I look forward to that. I attended the communications committee and also Region 8, where I gave the report for business development and some of the things that we're looking at on how to move forward and come up with some income for Aqua above and beyond dues revenue. So the other thing I attended, actually, I'll have to go back and check the date, so I'm not going to report on it tonight because it may have been last month. Thank you.
Director Atkins.
I, too, attended Aqua on last, basically, May 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And I was proud of our agency for sponsoring the ice cream, although I didn't get an ice cream. It's like, oh, missed it. Okay, good, good. I'm glad you did. I did attend the regional issue forum focus on the fix, not the fight. That was very well done. And the a session on by the finance program, previous drought, and how to prepare for the next one. The Region 8 meeting, as always, if you don't attend the Region 8 meeting, I highly recommend it. It's very informative, especially RJ's report. No, it's really a helpful situation. And then there was one session in the fix, not the focus on the fix, not the fight. I think that was the one where I was a gentleman named Jacob, who's a researcher from Davis, was presenting on what they call floodplain fatties and how to redirect flow through the Yolo Bypass. And it was incredible what was happening and how we're starving the salmon run in the Sacramento and how we could improve things just simply by increasing some residence time on the floodplain there. And that causeway where you're on 80 going across that big causeway and 5, we just have to rethink how to do it. And it's only a fraction of the money that's available could be used to basically rekindle the entire salmon fishery. And that would be exciting. As an oceanographer, I'm kind of stoked about that. And he's got some great information. If you haven't heard from him, check him out. I can't remember his last name right now, but Jacob, he's a UC researcher, and I'll get his name. I'll let you know. Thank you.
Director Cooper.
Thank you, President Martin. I thought the conference was excellent. I thought there were some really good subjects this time. Of course, drought is in everybody's mind and is out there, and I thought there were some good programs on drought. I did get an opportunity to attend the Delta Project Authority's luncheon program on the Delta fix. And it was very well done. It answered a lot of questions for me of what they're doing in the Delta. One of the things that I was, I guess, really impressed with is we thought, you know, it's going to build reliability into the process that we have now, and that's really what it's going to be. But it actually can produce 500,000 more acre feet of water in the way that it would be operated. So I think that's great that there are 500,000 more that can come south to Southern California. So that's a very good project.
Thank you, Director Cooper. Director Ozahosky.
Before I go, I think Director Atkins has another one.
I just want to say it's Jacob Katz at UC Davis. It was an excellent presentation. I mean, he has some data that was truly informative.
Okay.
All right. On May 10th, I've attended the SCV Water Virtual Drought Forum. Also on May 10th, and April, I'll send you that list in an email so you don't have to take minutes here. On May 10th, I've also attended the Innovative Technologies for Decentralized and Small Systems. That was hosted by the Water Research Foundation. What that was is they take new and upcoming companies that have any water-related or water treatment-related technologies, and they present that to any water agencies, water districts for their possible adoption or pilot program. So a few technologies of interest were microbubbles generated by fluidic oscillation. There was a handheld water quality analyzer that provides automated testing, calibration, and data collection that's being sent to a remote server. A technology that uses supercritical water oxidation to transform complex chemicals like PFAS and other forever chemicals to valuable recoverable resources. And Mr. Albert, I'll send you a copy of that for your evaluation. And a low maintenance biofilm-based sensor platform that monitors toxic shock, nutrient battery reactor performance, anaerobic digestion performance, real-time BOD, or TOC correlations, and effluent compliance. And I have a third one too, but I want to check with Mr. Byrne. If I volunteer on behalf of SCV Water, does that event constitute AB 1234 report?
Why don't we talk about it afterwards? And you could report it now if you like, because we have in our board policies and procedures, we have pretty specific criteria of what qualifies or not. And if you were asked to do it by the president, then that's maybe different than if you did it on your own.
Okay, understood. So I'll report right now. On May 7th, I've attended fishing and fun for kids event at Castaic Lake. It was hosted by LA County Department of Parks and Recreation in collaboration with Friends of Castaic Lake. I, along with SCV Water staff, and that was Ms. Kathy Martin and Mr. Marcel Margaritas, handed out drinking water to kids and their parents and passed out information regarding our Stage 2 water conservation ordinance. I believe 1,400 kids registered for the event, and they had around 800 to 600 kids. So that was a good way of letting people know about our water conservation. And that's it for me. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Director Ozahosky. Looking around for any other reports, I don't see any, but I did want to, in my report, I did report on something. I want to thank BBK for their scholarship that they provided at this conference. And if you haven't read the report, or if you weren't there at the opening breakfast, it was announced that the new BBK Arthur L. Littleworth Best and Krieger LLP Diversity Scholarship was awarded to a local Saugus High School student from our valley. And it was, Joe, was it on a statewide program, statewide outreach to find a recipient for this?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
And certainly we were proud to know that it was a Saugus High School student that received the award. And if you want to read more, take a look at my report. But I want to thank BBK for doing that. It was a really a highlight of the conference. Director Cooper.
You know, it would make a great article in the newspaper to show the student that received the award from Saugus High in water, and they're going on into engineering. So I think it'd make a great article in the newspaper to do that.
It would. And her presentation at that in front of that huge room was very impressive. Her calmness, her poise and making that talk, she's a very impressive student, and I see why you made the award. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say it turned out that it was kind of good luck that it ended up being someone from here, and she was incredibly impressive. And for those who didn't know, there's a little bit about Art Littleworth. So it wasn't a scholarship that came out of nowhere. He was had been at the firm for about close to 65 years and was a very preeminent water attorney going far back into the old Wild West and passed away recently. So that's the reason for the scholarship.
Great. All right. Do we have any public comment on the AB 1234s, April?
We do not.
We do not. Well, this meeting, for change, we do have a closed session meeting to cover items 12.1 and 12.2. And I presume, April, it's going to be right here in this room.
Yes, it will.
No need to log into Teams. So we will be taking a five-minute recess. And then at that conclusion of the 5 minutes, we'll be beginning the closed session. So we are in recess for 5 minutes. Please.
And I'll just announce that it's for the items, which I think you said. Thank you.